with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Film reviews and movie news.
Yes, it is. It's film reviews and movie news with me, Stuart Pink. And some say, after years of extensive research, he has found a way to control his Sega with his mind. It's Mark Searby.
Do you know, growing up, I wasn't a Sega kid. I was a Nintendo.
Was you not?
I was a Nintendo.
Ah, more of a Nintendo. Yeah, I was a PlayStation guy.
Yeah, but you see, the problem is we're a different generation. I'm older than you by an entire generation. So you saying PlayStation, I'm like, well, that was when I was at school, as in, you know, when I was in secondary school and whatever else. Whereas you're going, that was when I was a kid. No, when I was growing up, I was Nintendo. And a couple of my friends.
Was there then Sega after Nintendo?
No, they were at the same time.
No?
They were at same time. And they were basically rivals. So you know how you've got, you know, Xbox rivals PlayStation now. That's exactly how it was. So you were either a Nintendo kid or you were a Sega kid. That was it, basically.
So you were in the Nintendo camp, were you?
I was a Nintendo kid. A couple of friends of mine were Segas. So, you know, it wasn't too bad. It worked out nicely because you'd go around somebody's house and play Sega, which was great. Or they'd come around and play Nintendo. But, nobody ever had both. Nobody had both at all.
I mean, that's just too many cables, isn't it?
It was back in the day, yes. I mean, you're not talking about a HDMI lead or even a SCART lead. You're talking about... the auxiliary leads, the three-pin leads that used to go in the back.
Blue.
It's getting really nerdy now, isn't it?
Red, white,
and
yellow.
That's it, yeah. Oh, it was red, white, and yellow. Yes, that were the ones. Even then, I'm thinking maybe the NES probably didn't even have that. I'm trying to think what the back of it was.
Have massive plugs on the end of the cables as well, like plastic, chunky things, didn't they?
Yeah.
Knock someone out with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you knew they were clicking in. That was the thing. Like, right, that's it. Yeah. Here we go. And the
lead. Not dropping out.
Certainly the leads on the NES were very short. So you had to sit quite close to the TV as well.
Yeah. And bear in mind, the TVs were the great big square thing.
Exactly.
Like,
and if they fell over on you as well, that was it.
You'd lose a leg.
Yeah.
Dangerous game, wasn't it?
I know. So obviously then, years later, after I've stopped playing computer games because, you know, I don't have the time anymore, Nintendo buy Sega. And it's like a whole generation of us go, what? You can't do that. That's what? So, you know, that's basically what happened. And, you know, now Sega don't really have any say in the market at all, apart from reissuing old games. Which is a bit sad, but look, it's the way it goes. You know, that's the thing. You know, clearly there was something happened there where they overextended or they couldn't find the market anymore and Nintendo just took off again.
Nintendo had a longer cable. That's probably what it was.
That's probably what it was. Yeah, it's probably what it was.
It's all down to the cable leg for the end.
Look, we're getting really nerdy here. And the reason, obviously, we're talking about Nintendo and Sega and whatever else is because we're going to review a film that is based on a Sega property.
One of the finest exports of Sega.
Yes, well, it is. It's very true. It's very true, absolutely. But I guess we should talk about the big film that's in the cinema this week. Nope.
What a great title.
Yeah, I know. This is so for anybody confused, it is a film called Nope. N-O-P-E, as in nope. Not doing it. Nope. So, I mean, it's a great title, isn't it? But then...
It's going to confuse so many people.
It is going to confuse... One for Nope.
What film do you love to see? Nope.
Yeah. Do you want to go to the cinema to see Nope? Nope.
Nope.
Yeah, having said that, you know, the director, Jordan Peele, previously made Get Out and previously made Us. So it's not as though he's going for these wild titles, but... The thing is, with Get Out and with Us, they had deeper meanings to them. You know, there was something going on underneath. So Us could effectively be referred to as the people in the film, or it could have been referred to as the United States, the shortened version of it. It really depends on what your viewpoint from that film is. So
it's clever.
This is the third film from comedian turned horror filmmaker. Of course, that's the natural progression, isn't it? I guess that's what you'll be doing soon. You know, you stand-up comedian turned horror filmmaker.
I can just see it now.
Absolutely. So third film from Jordan Peele knocked it out of the park again, to be honest with you. I don't want to give too much away because a lot of things in this movie need to be seen without even a hint of being spoiled or even spoken about. And you and I were just talking off air, actually, about how the trailer possibly spoils some things, but then I don't think it does. You know, it's a difficult movie to talk about and also to show. So let me say this. I think both Daniel Kaluuya and Kiki Palmer, who are the brother and sister, the horse wrangling brother and sister who live on this lonely horse ranch. It's called the Gulch. Okay, Gulch.
The Gulch.
Yeah, in inland California, start to witness some uncanny and chilling things in the sky. So, so I think they're both brilliant here. Kaluuya's OJ is very low key, almost like a solemn character. He just wants to get on with life and try and bring in a bit of money by using some of his horses in TV commercials and also some films as well. He's not bothered about anything else, just cares about the horses. His sister, Emerald, is the live wire. She's got a million different things going on at once. She's never fully fixed into one thing, which really annoys her brother. Their father dies while out riding a horse, and they try to seek answers as to what happened. Then they start to discover some strange noises in the sky that spook the horses. Saying any more would ruin the rest of the film.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that's that. What I've said there is about the first 10 minutes of the movie. What I will say is I was captivated by this film all the way through. I really wasn't sure what was happening at any given moment. I had the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end a couple of times. I got chills. I started to perspire as well. And I genuinely, I'm not making this up now. I genuinely went, nope, nope, nope. Nope. When a couple of things happen, like, honestly, I know it sounds like I'm describing a horror film, doesn't it, really?
It does, yeah. That's why the bit I gleaned from the first part of the trailer.
You were a bit confused, weren't you? I was a bit horror? Like, nope. Is it a comedy? So I get it. That's the thing. You know, Jordan Peele's previous two films could be described as horror. They could be described as other things as well. Nope is very much a science fiction movie, but I think it's got a horror edge to it. It's also very much grounded in reality because everything OJ and Emerald do looks and feels like something I think most of us would do in those situations. Possibly. Okay. I've got to mention the sound design on this movie, actually. Just incredible. Some of the noises and sounds in the film and the way that it is pushed through different speakers in the cinema was just amazing. I mean, it's probably the best sound design I've heard since Denis Villeneuve's movie Arrival, which I bring that movie up because this film, Nope, has a few things in common with Arrival as well. Not going to say any more. Okay. Also, going to mention the cinematography by Hoyt van Hoytem. It's just stunning. I mean, he's worked with Christopher Nolan previously, and I think a lot of... If you've seen Interstellar, then the imagery in Interstellar clearly is kind of transposed over to this a bit as well. So I think Hoyt van Hoytem's work in Interstellar put him in really good stead for the work he's done in Nope as well.
Mm.
I think this film needs to be seen on the big screen. Because it's
Sounds like it.
Yeah, even more impactful. I'm gonna say this is Jordan Peele's best film to date. It's not as political as the other two, or at least on the surface, it's not. You know, I said to you a minute ago, Us could be seen about the story of the family in the film, or it could be seen as some sort of metaphor or allegory for the United States at that time, and still at this time, actually, to be honest with you. I mean, there's so much to unpack in Nope. As well, that's the thing. I genuinely can't wait to see it again and then again and again. So don't read anything else. Don't watch any more trailers. I'm not going to say any more either. Just go and see it because it is one heck of a ride. I genuinely loved this film from start to finish.
Amazing. Oh, brilliant. So, Nope, out in cinemas now. Best enjoyed in the cinema.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't watch the trailer. If anyone tries to tell you any more details, just say Nope.
Yeah. Yes. I'll tell you this. I've got to tell you this. So, I saw this at a press screening with loads of other film critics. I mean, there must have been about 300 people in that cinema. And there's a moment in the film, 40 minutes in, there's a moment in the film where genuinely it took the roof off the place. I haven't heard a reaction like that since Avengers Endgame.
For a room full of critics as well.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing.
It's not
and
easy.
There was genuine people going, nope, 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 no, nope, nope, no, nope. It even got to me and I was like, this is good filmmaking. This is really good filmmaking. And it only works when you see it on the big screen because you're immersed in it. And I think that's the great thing about Nope is that it just immerses you. As I said, sound design's amazing. Cinematography is amazing. The story's fantastic. The acting's great. Directing's great as well. You know, it's that immersive experience you get when you go and see something like this. And it's just dark apart from what's on the screen. And you're so transfixed by it that you do literally go, nope. Nope, no,
awesome. So, nope, just say yep and go and see it.
Exactly, exactly.
Great stuff. What else you got for us?
So, going back to our conversation about Sega and Nintendo, now
go, plug in.
Get ready. Put in the Master System. Or the Mega Drive, whichever one you want, basically. So on DVD and Blu-ray, and also on digital platforms, Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Now, did you see the first one?
I've seen bits of the first one. I feel like it was one of those, I think it was on, and I was like doing stuff. At the same time. I can't really remember all the things. I think it was kind of fun. I mean, completely wacky.
It was. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good fun. You know, I thought I really liked Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik in the first film. I did brilliant bit of
casting. His moustache is just so much.
And he twiddles it all the time as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So now in this one, Dr. Robotnik returns to Earth with a new ally, Knuckles, the listen, it's Knuckles, okay? Sonic and his new friend Tails stand in their way. So, yeah. So in this one, I just said to you, I really like Jim Carrey's Dr. Robotnik. He's in this less, unfortunately.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, when he is on screen, he steals the film. So Jim Carrey is still the best thing about this franchise. Sadly. Yeah. I think this franchise has now done one of the major wrong things that some franchises do when they hit big straight off the bat, and that is to introduce loads more characters. So now we have Knuckles and Tails both involved, and also a load more secondary characters. And I think the film is too packed with characters now, and as such, I think the storyline is trying to have all of them have their own moments, and I felt it became a bit of a mess, to be honest with you. The Knuckles storyline I thought was overblown. It's overlong as well. The Tails storyline is annoying, but to be fair, the character in the games was annoying. I mean, he's basically Sonic's version of Scrappy Doo. Nobody likes him. Sorry, but
everyone,
you know,
wanted to be Sonic, didn't they?
Yeah,
wanted to be.
So so we get more characters, but we get less actual storyline for Sonic and his new family, which is what this film is pushing. That's the thing, that Sonic is now part of Tom and Maddie's family life. He's like their son. It's an interesting take, but it never really takes off. That's the thing. There's never a payoff for it because the film is too interested in running off to the next plot point so it can get Sonic versus some bad guy action, basically. There's some good set pieces in this. I will say that. The best is when Dr. Robotnik are running through a temple being pursued by a boulder and then have to dodge all manner of traps throughout. I mean, it is a sequence that is ripped direct from the computer games. It's done really well. I thought the giant robot Dr. Robotnik was pretty awesome, and there was a lot of fun in that set piece as well. So I think the action is still pretty good. Much like the last film, to be honest with you, they do action well in these movies because they know it has to be larger than life because it's based on a computer game. So the action's good. The issue is that there's too much storyline. It's too bloated. It's too crammed with characters. It's a shame because I think more time with Knuckles would have been good. Less time with Tails would have been excellent, to be honest. So look, this sequel is nowhere near as good as the first film, yet there are some genuine highlights that I think are worth watching the film for.
Okay. The CGI still looks good.
Yeah, and This is the good thing. I mean, could you imagine if they got the CGI wrong? It's based on computer.
It'd be terrible, wouldn't it?
I mean, honestly. So, yeah, I mean, the CGI is good. And as I said, some good set pieces, some good action in it. It's just the characters. It's just so many. And Idris Elba voices Knuckles as well, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting, you know, and you're kind of like, okay, I'm not sure if he's cut out for doing voices all the time, but it sort of fits with the way that Knuckles, the character, is portrayed in this film. So that kind of works. But, you know, look, let's face it. Yeah. Watch it for Jim Carrey. Watch it for Jim Carrey. It's the best thing you can do.
Yeah. So we'd like to see a bit more of him, a bit less of Tails.
A lot less of Tails, characters. Please. Yes, a lot less. but, you know, look, let's face it. It's done really good at the cinema. It did really good at the cinema. It did a lot of money at the cinema. So I suspect we will be getting a third Sonic the Hedgehog movie in the next few years, which, as long as they bring back Jim Carrey.
She's still in it. That's all good.
I'm fine with it. And then it will actually be a respectable trilogy. Well, depending on what they do in the third. But, you know, so far, so good.
Nice. It's 2 hours and 2 minutes, which feels like a very long film for a Sonic.
Agreed. Kids. But once again, that's because there's so many characters.
Yeah.
That's the issue. And because they're all trying to have their own moment, 2 hours, you're right, it is a long movie when you know, for a kid's movie, but at the same time, you're kind of like, well, there's a lot to
keep
pack
busy
into
for 2 hours,
it. Yeah. I completely agree with you. It is too long. I think it's too long. But at the same time, if you're taking 20 minutes out of it, you're losing some sort of character development. So either you have to lose entire characters or you have to leave it at 2 hours.
Yeah. Or you could sort of have a break halfway through, go play the Sega version and then come back.
I mean, you could do that. You could do that. But once again, you'd admit it's worth watching all the way through because there are some really good Dr. Robotnik bits.
Nice. So this is out on...
This is DVD, Blu-ray and also on digital platforms as well.
Ah, brilliant. Is it also coming like a big sort of plastic tape thing sticking the top of your Sega?
It doesn't. You would think that the DVD or Blu-ray would come with like a metal ring or something, wouldn't you?
Oh, that'd be so good.
You know, like a special limited edition or something. That would be quite good. But no, it doesn't, unfortunately. But do look at the DVD cover because it's a homage to Sonic 2 game cover.
Uh-huh.
Which is really clever. Really clever. I mean, obviously, I tweeted out earlier, you know, that we were reviewing this. And if you look at that picture, you'll see it. So anybody who grew up with, you know, the original Sonic games will go, well, that's just Sonic 2, the game. That's the clever point of it. That's marketing for you. Marketing 101.
Ah, smashed it right down the middle. What else you got for us, Buck?
So also in cinemas is a film called Where is Anne Frank? It is set in Amsterdam in the near future where Kitty embarks on a journey to find Anne, who she believes is still alive in Europe somewhere. I mean, it's a really interesting way of bringing Anne Frank's story to an entirely new generation, or generations, I guess you could say that. So this is an animated feature film about Anne Frank's life and also the diary. And it's also about a girl who discovers a kinship with Anne, but she lives many decades afterwards, yet is talking directly to Anne Frank in some scenes. So it's almost a fantasy, time travel, real life, drama, documentary, adventure.
All of those things.
Or, if such a thing exists.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
I was quite fascinated by this film because of how different it is. Its storytelling is very unique, and you really do get to understand Kitty much more because of her association with Anne Frank. You know, these are not just two schoolgirls giggling and talking about boys. I mean, granted, the film does start like that, actually. But after that, it becomes way more nuanced and insightful into both their lives. So Anne Frank is explaining what is happening to her family, to Kitty, and why they're having to hide in a secret apartment. As Anne explains more to Kitty, who's actually reading it in Anne Frank's diary, that's the thing, but it's more as if Anne Frank is stood next to her, talking to her and telling her, that's when the film becomes a dark telling of Nazi occupation and the atrocities that they were committing all while Anne and her family are in hiding. As the film moves on, it changes into Kitty's story because Anne disappears on her. Obviously, those who know the Frank's story will know why, but Kitty doesn't. So she goes looking for her and even tries to file a missing persons report at the police station because she thinks she's lost her best friend. And the only way she knows how to get her back is to steal Anne Frank's diary from the museum that houses it in Amsterdam. But so then what happens is there is this big, huge media campaign to find the criminal who took it. But Kitty doesn't feel like she's a criminal. She only sees it as she's trying to find her friend. And this is the only way she can do it. So there's a lot to pack into it. A lot.
Yeah, not an easy sort of sell to get that all
it's
into.
It's really not.
A short film.
The thing is, on the most basic of level, this movie is about friendship and finding solace in somebody's writing who you never met and who is probably of your age when you start reading it. You know, the film is so multi-layered, it's hard to pick up everything on one viewing. I've got to say, it's got a lot in there that I think other people will pick up on. You know, as I said, for me, it's a movie about friendship and trying to stay friends with these people. But somebody else might see it and see it as a completely different film. They might see it as, you know, this is the struggles of war or as something else. I don't know. I think you can take a lot away from this movie. The animation is gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And it is very much in keeping with Ari Folman's previous adult animated movie, which was Waltz with Bashir. So anybody who saw Waltz with Bashir, which is now, I'm thinking, coming up to maybe 10 years ago, and it won a lot of awards when it came out. So if you saw that, you'll know the animation here. It's a little bit more cutesy, but then you're talking about teenage coming of age story here as well. Yeah. But the thing is, because the animation is done in such a way, it doesn't take away from the impact of the story, which I think is the most important part of this film. Granted, it could have been a feature film movie. It could have been filmed, you know, it could have been real actors. But I think because of the animation, it stands out even more. So it's one of those things where you come to the animation, but then you stay for the storyline as well. I think it's a really interesting way of telling a story that probably all of us know, or at least think we do know, or at least we know a vague sort of area of it. But it's telling that story in a very different way. And I like that about it. You know, me and you talk a lot about films and directors doing their own thing and not being impeded by studio systems or anything else like that. And whether that comes out good or bad, at least they're doing their own thing. I think with R.A. Folman, he's doing his own thing every time. And every time I've seen a movie of his, I kind of think, yeah, this is another good piece of work. And I think Where Is Anne Frank is another good piece of work.
Excellent. It does look like a real kind of original take on a story that we'll probably, most of us know.
Yeah.
But I guess it's being a PG as well, kind of aiming for an audience that might not know the story yet.
Yeah.
Do you think you get enough from it if you don't know the story already?
That's a good question. I think you do. I think you do, yeah. Based on the fact that obviously Kitty is reading Anne Frank's diary and you are seeing what is actually happening to the Franks as well and why they're having to hide in the apartment. My only question is, what age range is this aimed at? I think this is actually more an adult movie, like Waltz with Bashir, rather than anything for kids. Teenagers, probably not as well, because it is much more adult in its storytelling. I do think that this is aimed very much at adults, which is no bad thing at all. But as I said, the animation is gorgeous to look at. You know, it's like talking about a Studio Ghibli movie. It's like talking about Princess Mononoke. Amazing, amazing animation. But that movie is all about climate change. And it was made some 30 something years ago. And it's an adult movie. Yet I know loads of people who have watched Studio Ghibli movies with their kids, and their kids have grown up with Studio Ghibli movies. And yes, they may not have understood some of the the darker storylines or the nuances or anything else like that. But what they understood was, actually, this is a really good film. It's really interesting. And maybe years later, they'll go back and go, oh, I get that reference now. So I think that's kind of the same with Where Is Anne Frank, is that maybe some kids will watch it and be quite interested in it and then go back years later and go, oh, right, okay, I get this bit now. I understand it because I've been through that. I've been through that coming of age that Kitty is going through. Now I understand it more. So as I said, very multi-layered, yeah, but not in a bad way.
Brilliant. So where is Anne Frank available to watch?
So it's in cinemas. In cinemas only at the moment.
In cinemas. Okay.
Yes.
Excellent. What you got for us next week, Mark?
So next week, we're going to be talking about the remake of Firestarter. You remember, you probably don't know because you don't like horror movies, but the Stephen King movie Firestarter, which originally starred Drew Barrymore, they've done a remake.
I instantly thought of The Prodigy song.
No, it's not that. They've now done a remake of it. So there's a new Firestarter. We're also going to be talking about Downton Abbey, A New Era. So it's the second film.
It's happened again.
So we're going to be talking about that.
More drama.
And then we're also going to be talking about the first ever Welsh language horror movie.
Whoa,
so it's
okay.
All in the Welsh language, and it's a horror film. It's never been done before. It's a movie called The Feast. So we'll also be talking about that.
Excellent. I look forward to it. You're going to have to do the review in Welsh.
No chance. If I do that, I will not be on air the week after. I would offend far too many people. So no, it will be. It will not be done in that at all.
A Welsh horror film. Excellent. Look forward to it. Grand. I'll see you there for that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And obviously it's called The Feast. So maybe bring some food.
I'll bring a napkin. You bring the food.
Oh, okay. Right. I'll bring the vol-au-vents.
Film reviews and movie news with Stuart Pink and Mark Searby.
Thanks for listening to Film Reviews and Movie News. We've been doing this little podcast for years now. Mark has watched and expertly reviewed hundreds of films, and I've made hundreds of terrible jokes. They're all available to listen to again if you subscribe to the Film Reviews and Movie News podcast. It's freely available wherever you get your podcasts from, or you can find all the latest episodes and everything else I do online at stuartpink.com.